The views and opinions expressed by the hosts on MadisonTalks.com are those of the host. That's why we do it. Give us a call, 608-210-1667. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in to The Phil Anderson Show. Phil's a libertarian, a Christian, and his grandma once said, the kind of kid who won't shut up. Join us as we discuss current events, politics, and whatever else comes up. No topic is off limits. This is not some campus safe space. Now, here's your host, Phil Anderson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the last episode of the Phil Anderson Show, just because we're changing the name. Moving forward, for the rest of this episode and future episodes, will be called the Free People Show. So that's not so specific to me, and it describes more about what we actually want to talk about and what we actually want to promote, and that is the idea that people should be free. The goal is to promote people being free from government coercion, free from political coercion, which isn't exactly the same thing, free from any power or authority to which they do not voluntarily submit. We'll talk about fighting the government, avoiding the government, and how democracy is really just two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner. We're expanding our show to multiple times a week on MadisonTalk.com and possibly other platforms. And what we need to do is we need to find sponsors to help do that. People or businesses paying for ads or just making donations. This is not free. We need to pay for web hosting. We need to pay for our fabulous engineer. All the technical stuff that makes this show possible and make it possible for you to listen today, not only live, but in podcast form as well. So if you want to find out about how to do either, visit our Facebook page or email info@freepeopleshow.com. We're also broadcasting live via Facebook today, via my personal page and the Free People Show Facebook page. So welcome to everyone who's listening live in all the variety of ways there are to do so. And as you listen to this on the podcast, please let us know if you like the show. Visit the Facebook page, tweet at Free People Show, and let us know what you think. So the phone number to call and talk to us today, 608-210-1667. That's 608-210-1667. And in case you missed it, the website on which we'll be hosted is changed from MadisonTalkers.com to MadisonTalks.com, Madison Talks, due to somebody having a problem with the idea that we're using Talkers as part of our URL, which is pretty ridiculous, but we've decided that it's better to change directions now rather than have to pay very expensive lawyers to fight something that we shouldn't have to fight in the first place. So that's where things stand, MadisonTalks.com. So my co-host today, Miles Kristen, who is, I would say, at least from my perspective, an expert and authority on protests, among many other things. He's also the owner of the Yellow Rose Gallery on State Street. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, but there's been a lot of protests going on lately. Over a variety of things, yes, Miles.
A lot of demonstrations. I don't know if all of them count as protests. But yes.
Demonstrations of what, other than sort of blind ignorance about what's actually going on?
There have been a lot of different rallies about Trump, organized by a lot of different people. One of those was on the day of the inauguration here in Madison. The Socialist Alternative had a Resist Trump rally in March. The day after, there was a much larger event organized not by the six individuals they want us to believe it was, but actually it was more done by the Democratic Party and unions and groups like Planned Parenthood and so forth.
Not spontaneous. People rising up against the tyranny and the fascism of Trump.
Not that
wouldn't be a good idea.
This fake idea that it was this very organic protest put together by six individuals that were supposed to believe that these six women got together and they put together this gigantic march. And then actually you look at it, who put together the crowdfunding page that raised the $5,000? That was some guy. Okay, so it was six women and one guy. And then, who marshaled the event? The same exact people from the AFL-CIO who marshaled the 2015 Right to Work protest at the Capitol, which I documented years ago, and that's a very suspicious situation where you had the union organizers working hand-in-hand with the police to essentially work as liaisons to kick the protesters out of the building and to, you know, squash any bigger resistance out of it. But this rally that happened, and it was a massive amount of people. I mean, it was
like how many?
They said it was somewhere between 70,000 and 100,000 people.
But those numbers are usually inflated. Like I remember the parade downtown when the Cubs won the World Series. They said it was 5 million, but there's no way it was 5 million.
An entire quarter of the Capitol was filled. The entirety of State Street was filled, and Library Mall was completely filled. I hadn't seen anything like it in 5 years at least. But it was just not this organic coalition of broad ideas that they wanted to believe. It was, there must have been at least 6 or 7 members of the Democratic Party, being 6 or 7 different Democratic elected officials speaking, and nobody, from say the Libertarian Party or the Green Party. They did allow one person from the Socialist Alternative to speak, but I think that was also so that they were able to be involved with the rally the day beforehand. They kind of knew that by letting one person from the Socialist Alternative speak at the Saturday rally, then the Socialist Alternative would help promote their rally on Saturday.
Well, and what's so alternative about the Socialist Alternative to what progressives want to do anyway? I mean, it's basically more or less pretty much the same thing. So it's not as if they're allowing the opposition to speak or even a dissenting voice to speak. It's just one of their own under a different name.
Well, there's the International Socialist Organization that's all over the country, and they've and I think they have one chapter in England, and they have the Socialist Alternative is just a different socialist group here in Madison, and I think while we disagree with them on some subjects, I think we definitely would agree with them on certain things like the war on drugs and maybe some of the foreign
and the war on war, the wars,
the wars,
the,
and
the
so
wars. Yeah,
I would like to see libertarians and socialists work together on the issues that we agree on.
But I think that one of the things you point out is that when we look at situations like this, and right now there's been a lot of attention paid over the last few months to Trump's potential conflict of interests, him owning businesses and possibly being in debt to Russian people or Russian businesses or whatever. And that's something that's, that we consider to be bad, that we want our people who are serving us in public office to be free of influence from the outside based on their personal activities. But in this case, it sounds like what you're describing is more of a confluence of interests. So that there are people that are progressives or socialists or, leftist Democrats who belong to organizations like the Democrat Party or other things, and they want to give us the impression that they're stepping outside of these roles, these official roles, to be part of a popular uprising against what they see as tyranny and fascism, which I'm not saying it's not, of course. I'd like to disclaim that. But that this is something more, as you said, organic, when, those of us who are suspicious, and rightly so, about this sort of organization of political activity, see it as they're just carrying out what they do every day in the name of a different movement, a different organization. So they're still acting as members of the Democratic Party or Socialist Party. They're still acting as progressives, still acting as members of, supporters of Planned Parenthood or NOW or whatever it might be. But it's just a different way of doing it. And people shouldn't be fooled. This is all one thing, I think.
It was Saturday's The Women's March on Madison was nothing more than the Democratic Party basically continuing the failed campaign of last year. I mean, this way they organized it was so ridiculous. I mean, I literally saw people wearing Hillary Clinton stickers. Like, they still had their stickers from last year, and they pulled their stickers out.
What about Bernie ones? There's a lot of No.
I mean, they're
done with him, I guess.
There might have been some Bernie T-shirts, but there were literally people who gave speeches. This one kid gave this speech about how she was very happy the idea that she was about to have a woman president, and everyone cheered. And it was just like, well, what they need to understand is, one, I think Democrats need to come to terms with some serious failures they made. They need to come to the terms of the fact that Bernie Sanders was cheated out of the nomination,
Yeah, so they should shut up about cheating. And hacking and all that stuff. They should just shut up about that, because that's just...
They don't have...
That's so hypocritical.
They have no credibility on so many of these things.
No.
And, I mean, the weirdest thing, I think, is the fact that anything that's come up from WikiLeaks, they just automatically deny anything that's in WikiLeaks. And it came out that the whole thing about the Pied Piper, the fact that the strategy of Clinton's team was to promote candidates like Donald Trump to win the primary, his primary, because they thought he would be easier to defeat in the general election, that is out there. It's open. It's known. But they deny it. And I mean, anybody still thinking that Hillary was this amazing candidate? There was literally posters for the National Women's March on Washington, where they had, it was like a picture of Washington, D.C., a cartoon picture, and there was like a Muslim woman, Ruth Ginsburg, and then another woman, and then Hillary Clinton. And it's like, have you not learned anything from the election? Hillary Clinton was a terrible candidate. The Bernie Sanders people who thought that Bernie Sanders was a stronger candidate were right. You know, Hillary supporters were wrong. They need to come to terms with that, but they won't. And so they're just completely, you know, repeating the mistakes. And it's just, it's absurd. And the thing about it is, I was thinking about the math of it. You've got about 63 million Americans voted for Trump. Mm-hmm. 65 million Americans voted for Donald Trump. Or 65 million Americans voted for Hillary. Mm-hmm. 63 voted for Trump. So you've got like about 130 million Americans who voted for one of the two candidates. You've got over 320 million Americans in this country. So even you'd minusing out the, say,
under 18, yeah.
Yeah, 75 million that are under 18, add in, you know, however many million for those who are felons and so forth who can't vote.
Sure.
And so you, roughly, in the end, you still have 100 million Americans who were eligible to vote who did not vote.
Because they feel they have no voice. And I haven't seen the follow-up to this in the post-election polling, but I'd be willing to guess that among the turnout of people who voted for Trump and Clinton, you know, both turnouts were lower. Both vote totals were lower than previous. Hillary got a lot fewer votes than Obama did both times he ran. Trump got fewer votes, I think, than Romney. I'm not entirely sure if that's accurate, but it was close. But I think less Republicans voted and more people voted who hadn't voted before, simply because, you know, you can look at Trump a lot of different ways. And he, to me, he's, you know, despicable and he's a tyrant and he's, you know, a would-be fascist if we let him get away with that. But had he been an establishment version of all that, then he wouldn't have been elected. The issue, you know, the way he presented himself as an outsider, it could have been any outsider that could have won, I think. Almost any outsider could have beat Hillary Clinton, because people are just fed up with this idea. And it used to be something that just belonged to progressives, and now it belongs to Democrats and Republicans and everybody in Washington and most of the mainstream of both those big parties. And that's this idea that they know what's better for you than you do. So they will tell you, you need this, you need that, we need to have the government do this. They have this elite attitude that they get from being part of the parties. That's sort of what you get when you become a Democrat. You become part of the group, part of the elite, whether or not you're, you know, academically qualified or financially qualified for that or whatever. You become part of this group of people that get to decide platforms and candidates and who is going to make decisions for everybody. And the goal of both parties, to a certain extent, has been to increase influence of government in people's lives. On the Democrat progressive side, it's a lot, that, you know, it's all through the economy and many, many other ways, public education, et cetera, et cetera. On the Republican / conservative side, it's not one of freeing people, not one of getting government off your back. It's rewarding certain elements of the economy to try to manage it, which is just as laden with coercion and laden with this idea that they know better than other people. You know, if you're Donald Trump or any Republican in Washington, you can't really claim, it hasn't borne out to be true in history, that you know which buttons to push to juice the economy to get it going again. I mean, there's these false ones of just printing money or operating at a deficit or with a huge national debt or, you know, tariffs, which is an absolutely stupid idea. All these different things that you can say, well, we know what we're doing. Donald Trump, whoever, it could be anybody, it has created jobs, has done this, has done that. But it's all just false. And people are sick and tired, I think. And that was my experience, you know, walking around, driving around Wisconsin, talking to people, sick and tired of this idea that anybody is smarter than they are about running their lives, deciding what they should do with their money, who they should give to, who should educate their children, what sort of relationships and contracts they should form, all of these things. They're just sick and tired of it, which, well, we're getting close to our 15-minute break here. I can hear the music creeping in. Thanks, Mike. So, but that's really, as we sort of covered protests and other things in the first 15 minutes of this show, that's really what we want this to be about, because that's a sentiment that human beings have. They want to be free. They want to have liberty. They have the right to. They own themselves. That's the point of the show. That's the point of libertarian politics. And that's why we're going through the effort of producing this show. So we'll be back after the break. This is the Free People Show at MadisonTalks.com. You can talk to us after the break. We're going to talk about eminent domain. We're going to talk about civil asset forfeiture. And we're going to talk a little bit about one of our sponsors, 608-210-1667. Join us after the break.
It's my turn to drive. But it's my turn to drive.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com. Looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
It is the fire. Welcome back to the Free People Show at MadisonTalks.com. New name of our show, The Free People Show. You can call in and talk to either myself, your host, Phil Anderson, or my co-host, Miles Kristen, at 608-210-1667. 608-210-1667. I'd like to give a brief shout-out to our sponsor, one of our sponsors for today's show, and that is the International Justice Mission. The International Justice Mission is an international, faith-based, non-governmental organization focused on human rights, law, and law enforcement. Founded in 1997 by Gary Haugen, it is the world's largest international anti-slavery organization. It works to combat sex trafficking, child sexual assault, cyber sex trafficking, forced labor, slavery, property grabbing, which we're going to talk about in a minute because that happens here too, police abuse of power also happens here, and addresses citizens' rights of minorities. The bulk of IJM's work focuses on slavery and sex trafficking, and if you want more information or to be involved or to help out in this struggle against this sort of abuse of people, go to the International Justice Mission website, which is www.ijm.org, and find out how to get involved. So that's the IJM. Thanks for sponsoring us today, IJM. So now we're going to talk about property grabbing, which is this particular concept that's enshrined in law and practice called eminent domain. So what is eminent domain? That, I think people have a general idea of what that is. It's the process through which the government decides there's some property that they need. And for whatever reason, they find ways to take it from people that own it, which to me raises the question of, you know, if you own something, I mean, do you really own it? What does it mean to own something? As I was studying for my real estate license and continuing education, we talk about what it means to own property. It's the right to decide how it's going to be used, the right to dispose of it, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you don't really have that right if eminent domain exists, because at any point, if you're on a particularly juicy, well-located piece of land, your business is there, and it's happened around Madison, around Wisconsin, all over the country, then if somebody in the halls of power, the halls of government, decides, you know, a better use for that would be, I don't know, a bus station, a railway station, a shopping mall, whatever it might be, then they have the right to do that. Now, this sort of comes from the Constitution. In the Fifth Amendment, it does say that the government has the right, and this was actually a big argument initially among the founding fathers whether this should exist. But, you know, it basically it says that the government has the right to take property for public use. So strictly speaking, for public use. And they must give a just compensation to that person. But that, you know, what is just compensation? I would argue that the Constitution is wrong in this case, that the idea that people own themselves and own their property shouldn't be abridgeable by the government deciding that there's a better use for it. That if you actually own property, the idea that property is owned by a person or by a corporation, that should never take place. But given the Constitution that we have, flawed document as it is, great document, but flawed, that's what we have to live with. But all over the country, there are times that governments, local, state governments, whatever, take control of property through legal means and sometimes even less than ethical means by condemning property that they can't get the owner to sell, et cetera, et cetera. And it's tragic. And it's a particular issue lately because our president... Is he your president, Miles? Is President Trump your president?
Yeah, I mean, my the way I look at it is my president is a couple words I won't use, and then I, you know, I think my president, well, yeah, I'm going to say, yeah, my president is an a-hole. That's what I look at it.
But he's still your president. He's still our president. Yeah, I mean, by definition. I mean,
saying not my president, that's not going to stop him from bombing and killing people on the other side of the planet. And we have to, as Americans, realize that we are responsible for the people who get elected, whether we elected them or not, whether we voted for them or not. You know, we have to take responsibility for the actions of George W. Bush and Barack Obama and Donald Trump. You know?
Agreed. So President Trump's got a long history of eminent domain abuse. David Boies of the Cato Institute wrote an excellent article that summarizes this. And here's the story from the campaign. And I know this was sort of covered already, but I think it exemplifies exactly how wrong the practice of eminent domain can go. So for more than 30 years, Vera Koking lived in a three-story house just off the boardwalk in Atlantic City. So this is her house, right? I own a house, at least I think I own a house. It happens to be for sale right now, but I own it. I should be able to dispose of it as I choose. Let's see what happens to Vera. Donald Trump built his 22-story Trump Plaza next door. In the mid-1990s, Trump wanted to build a limousine parking lot for the hotel. Does that sound like a public use? I don't know. Yeah. He's a taxpayer, but yeah, and probably a huge campaign contributor.
Is he a taxpayer?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's actually, if the net is paying taxes, he owed taxes and find ways around it. I don't really know. I mean, I don't think that, we'll probably never see the light of day on that.
Yeah.
So he bought several nearby properties to build his parking lot, his limousine parking lot. But three owners, including the by then elderly, widowed Ms. Koking, refused to sell. So as his daughter Ivanka said in introducing him at his campaign announcement, Donald Trump doesn't take no for an answer. Well, clearly that's the case. I mean, if you look at how he's practicing his role as president so far, he's just doing what he wants. And those who support him are finding, you know, excuses / rationalization / you know, acts by previous presidents to justify what he's doing. But yeah, he clearly doesn't take no for an answer. So he turned to a government agency, the Casino Reinvestment Development Authority, to take Koking's property. So there is a government agency called the Casino Reinvestment Development Authority. That's how far afield our government goes in being involved in this sort of thing. Well, Peter Bannon and his brother owned another building on the block. A few months after they paid $500,000 to purchase the building for a pawn shop, the CRDA offered them $174,000 and told them to leave the property. So, according to the Fifth Amendment, does that sound like fair and just compensation? Obviously not. They just paid, and I'm sure that they didn't get ripped off. I mean, somebody could make the argument that they paid too much for it in the first place, but that's neither here nor there. It was worth $500,000 to them. I'm sure they're being property taxed at the $500,000 mark. So, that's in essence what it was worth. The CRDA offered them $174,000 and told them to leave. A Russian immigrant, Bannon said, I knew they could do this in Russia. I'm not going to fake a Russian accent, although I've heard plenty of them. I knew they could do this in Russia, but not here. I would understand if they needed it for an airport runway, but for a casino? So here's a gentleman who, you know, we like to point to as Americans examples of both short and long-term government corruption and overreach of government all over the world as if we're different. But here's a guy who was from Soviet Russia, who can't believe what the American government is doing to him. So that's how it all played out. Ultimately, Trump and the CRDA lost in court, as She was represented by the Institute for Justice, but the public law firm that later litigated Keto versus City of New London and other landmark property cases. So that is the governing case right now in Keto versus City of New London, is that right now governments, according to the Supreme Court, have the authority to take things. The definition of what a public use is can be defined by the local government. And so a limousine parking lot, theoretically, is something that is for the public use. So that raises the question, though. You know, we talk about being free people. The name of the show is The Free People Show. What does it mean to be free and own property? What does it mean to own yourselves? Apparently, it means you can own something and you can own yourself. You can keep what you earn only so far as democracy lets you. And once the democracy is up and running, once it exists in a local, state, federal form, whatever it might be, that all it takes is either 51% of voting people, not even 51% of the population, but just 51% of the people that happen to vote, to elect somebody to office and elect people to office, who then, among those people in a legislative body, 51% of them that were elected by 51% of the minority of people that voted, to decide that a particular piece of property, which belongs to somebody, they have a deed, they have ownership, they have the full bundle of rights that goes along with property ownership, the right to own it, the right to keep it, the right to not sell it and dispose of it as they choose. That only goes so far as 51% of 51% of a minority of people who vote. That's what property ownership is in the United States of America, all over the country. And it's just a travesty. It doesn't make any sense to me. I think that's one of the ways, you know, we talk a lot about the ways that people have been fooled about what their government is and what it does. We've been fooled into thinking that democracy is good, that democracy is something that results in justice, when we know that to not be true. Just look at our own history, and we see that democracy has not produced justice throughout the history of the United States of America. Quite the contrary. The only thing that produces justice is when individuals have rights, and all of those rights are respected, and everyone's rights are respected under the law, and there's a court system that can adjudicate that. But that just doesn't happen that way. What we have here is another way that we've been fooled, and that is that we own things, that we own our own labor, that we own our own property, that we have control over our children and how they're raised and what they're taught. All of these things do not exist in the United States of America anymore. And I'm not trying to scare anybody or paint a picture or make an extreme argument for something. I think factually, what I just said, factually, is not true. And I just demonstrated it to you. And we have a president right now who, although there are some libertarians who supported him, and I think many are abandoning ship now, and some people who are libertarians are people that love liberty. It might be anybody who just really cares about rights of the individual versus rights of the coercion and authority of the government. Anyone who is hopeful about this president as being an outsider or somebody who might shake things up, you know, it's time to really take an honest assessment of what this man, our president, all of our president, stands for, because he's got a long history and is really upfront, even when asked in the debates about eminent domain, which was a great question to ask a guy like Donald Trump, a great question. Because it reveals, you know, something that he has to answer for that he's done. When politicians are asked about their positions and their votes about various things in Congress, in state houses, legislation that they've signed or vetoed as an executive, there's always this opportunity to sort of dance around it and say, well, on balance, it was better or it was worse, or, you know, I voted for it because it was a trade-off for something else. There's all these rationalizations. But when Donald Trump was asked a question about eminent domain, which is basically the government using its force, its monopoly on force, to steal property from somebody, he had to answer it honestly, because he was in charge of all those decisions that his corporation made. He was in charge of this situation in New Jersey with Ms. Koking. He was fully responsible for it and was the person that was standing to profit from it. So when he answers that question, and said, I got no problem with eminent domain, it's a useful tool of government, which is more or less what he said and what he has said, then we know that we've got somebody in power, in too much power, because Congress has abdicated their authority over trying to restrain the executive power. We have somebody in power in the executive branch of the United States government, the president, who has no problem with the government doing whatever it wants, with him doing whatever he wants. I have a big problem with that. I think many, many people, libertarians, progressives, Republicans, people that don't have a political label, feel the same way. That is not what our government stands for. And it certainly just walks all over the idea that we are a free people, that the United States is a free country. So that's eminent domain. We'll talk a little bit more about that, possibly, as well as civil asset forfeiture, which is another way that governments abuse their authority. After the break, this is the Free People Show on MadisonTalks.com. If you want to call in and talk to us, after the break, 608-210-1667. We'll be back in about 2 minutes.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary.
Six percent, 7% on the average real estate transaction, that is a lot of money. Maybe you should just do it yourself. Well, a lot of people do that nowadays, but it might not be the best idea. A lot of that money you're paying a real estate broker is going to outdated methods, unnecessary fancy offices, and overpaying executives for a lifetime of quote-unquote service. But you don't need to go that route. Silver Compass Realty is a full-service real estate brokerage serving all of South Central Wisconsin, and the commission is negotiable. The folks at Silver Compass will explain exactly what they're going to do to help you sell your home, how that will help you reach your goals, and stand right beside you every step of the way. They want to be your broker, your expert, even when you're not in the middle of a transaction. Silver Compass Realty, helping you find your way home. Contact them today at silvercompassrealty.com or call 608-361-8608. Silver Compass Realty, helping you find your way home.
You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
Welcome back to the Free People Show. I'm Phil Anderson, your host. My co-host today is Miles Kristen. If you want to call in and talk to us about the variety of issues that we're covering, 608-210-1667. And not coincidentally, Miles is the owner of the Yellow Rose Gallery on State Street. The Yellow Rose Gallery is the last private art gallery on State Street. They feature some of the finest works from inspiring local arts and artists. Located just a block from the Overture Center and Orpheum Theater, right above the Fountain Bar on the second floor of the Madison Center Building, 122 State Street. Current hours are Saturday from 11 to 5, but I know Miles has lots of events and showings and exhibits that he has at other times, so make sure you follow him on Facebook and check out the website so that you can see what's going on. Often has really neat events specific for artists on Thursdays and Wednesdays and other nights of the week as well, but you can drop in there on Saturdays. So welcome back to the Free People Show. So what we want to talk about this quarter hour is something called civil asset forfeiture, and I think a lot of people are familiar with that to a certain extent, but let's describe how it's yet another way that the government abuses its monopoly on force. And notice that we've talked about the government stealing things from you without mentioning that taxation is theft. I know a lot of people consider that to be somewhat of a controversial statement. When I present that idea to people, there are many people who say, well, I voluntarily pay taxes. Well, then I guess it can't be theft if you're voluntarily paying for it. But that begs the question then, if you voluntarily pay all your taxes, then you're voluntarily paying for things like drone strikes, eminent domain, civil asset forfeiture, all these different things that are widely considered to be abuses of power and authority, overreach of government. And if you voluntarily pay your taxes, does that mean, I'd ask all of you who are listening, and I guess I'll ask Miles what his opinion on that is. If you voluntarily pay your taxes, does that necessarily mean, it could be a one-word answer. It might be yes or no. I don't know. But does that necessarily mean that you agree with, that you're fine with by paying your taxes, by voluntarily paying your taxes? You're fine with all those things that the government does with your taxes. What do you think?
It's not voluntary. You know, well, the threat is you either pay your taxes or you'll be fined or potentially go to jail. And so that's not voluntary at all.
No, it's not. And it's ridiculous. I was thinking the other day that actually being subject to government is somewhat like being pistol whipped. And that might be an extreme analogy, but you know, there's always the threat that you could use the gun, right? The pistol's in a person's hand.
On a side note, the only time in recent history that somebody has threatened to pistol whip me was was the Solidarity sing along, which is kind of funny that a group of anti-gun people have threatened to use gun violence against me.
Well, that's interesting. It's such a benign sounding name. The
Solidarity Sing-Along.
I know you've got a long history with them, Miles, which we won't cover in today's show. I've got some friends among that group, too, so I don't know who's involved.
I do as well. I love a good 5% of them.
Yeah, okay. Awesome. But to get back to what we're talking about, you know, there are lots of ways that the government abuses you.
Forfeiture. So you mean as if, like, for instance, the sheriff's department taking someone's property?
Yeah, exactly. So they pull you up. Now, the law says, in Wisconsin, law says, in many other states, the law says that if they pull you over and you're suspected of a crime, it could be any crime.
You don't have to even be charged with the crime. Like, for instance, let's say I have $500 in my pocket and I was pulled over and they don't find anything. There's nothing. But, hey, maybe I have a bunch of Grateful Dead CDs and a tie-dye T-shirt in the back. Well, now they suspect that I'm involved in some nefarious plant or something. And then they can take my money and they don't have to give it back to me.
That's right. They don't. And the police department itself can dispose of that property, meaning that they can sell it, they can use it. If there's cash, they can spend it.
Yeah.
And in Wisconsin in particular, now there is some legislation that's coming into the state assembly that would reform this. I don't know how effective that legislation is going to be. I haven't read it, but it certainly should be an improvement. But right now, there's not an official way that the police departments report how they dispose of that property. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example. A case in Whitewater from 2015. A state appeals court found that a seizure and forfeiture was unconstitutional because it was excessive. But it happened. But then thankfully, the state appeals court found it excessive. A grandmother and her grandson jointly purchased a new Toyota Corolla for $22,500. So grandma, grandson, she's probably signing for him. He's in college, whatever. The Whitewater police arrested the college student for selling small amounts of marijuana. Three times he was found, you know, accused of that, and they seized the vehicle. The Court of Appeals panel held that seizing the vehicle was disproportionate for the grandmother, but not the student. So the grandmother, being a party to this, owns half of the car, I guess, if that's a way to describe it. And the grandson owns half, and they decide that, well, this is not fair for the Whitewater police to have seized this and hold it as regards to the grandmother, but for the grandson. Well, you can't really cut the car in half anyway. The $26,000 was kept by the police, although the amount of drugs sold did not exceed $250. So that's what can happen. So this is actually an extreme case, right, where only one of the people involved is accused of a crime, yet they kept the whole property. But many, many times, and actually we don't have very good records, but we know from people that come forward and complain. Of course, it's not always a good idea to complain about the police keeping your stuff either, because if you go to the press and say, you know, I was pulled over for this, or I was arrested for that, I would charge, not charge, whatever, not found guilty yet, and they kept, you know, $2,000 of cash or my cell phone or my computer or my car or whatever, that's not really the way that somebody who's, you know, come into the court system is going to approach it. So I'm guessing that just based on common sense, a lot of people aren't going to complain about police abuse like they don't complain about a lot of abuse. But they're not going to complain about this because they're afraid it's just going to be worse for them.
Another, on a similar note, what a lot of people don't know about is what the Dane County Jail, and I'm sure jails across the country do this. Now at the Dane County Jail, let's say you got arrested for, I don't know, asking Peter Barca a question or calling a cop.
For example.
Yeah, just, you know, theoretical situations where one might be thrown in jail.
Right.
So an individual gets thrown in jail and they have something like $3 in their pocket. Instead of holding on to their $3 and giving them their $3 back, I swear to you, this actually happened. I got an ATM card, and I'm like, what the hell am I? What is this? What am I supposed to do with this? I'm given this ATM card for my $3.25. Okay, so can I put $3 worth of gas in my car? Nope, doesn't work at the gas station. Okay, can't go up to an ATM machine pull out $3. And I think it would be kind of embarrassing to try to explain that to a bank teller. Yeah, I have this ATM card worth $3 that I got from jail. So, and it cancels after so many days. So there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of cases in Madison alone where individuals are arrested, they have some money in their pocket, and then they're given these ATM cards that don't work properly and are often hard to get your money out of, and you didn't get your money out in, I think it was something like 20 days. So now where does your money go? I don't know where that $3 of mine went.
I think it's the same kind of scam that's a strong word, but when you buy something and there's some cash back involved in like a deal that you sign up for something and they send you a gift card, that it's not so easy to track how much is on there. And inevitably, you don't spend all of it or you don't use it, or you're offered a rebate. Like at Target, you know, there's quite often rebates on things, and they're banking on that a certain percentage of people aren't going to claim the rebate or use the debit card or use all the money on the debit card. So there's always this extra money. So in your case, somebody arrives and gets arrested or whatever. They take their $3.25. They give them a debit card back that supposedly has $3.25 on it. And if the person can't find a way to use it or can't find a way to use all of it and can't use it freely, like their cash would have been accepted pretty much everywhere, then that's yet another way. The police department's making money off arresting people, which is, you know.
Even if it's just pennies, as they said in the movie Office Space, what, like Superman 2?
Yeah. I mean, it's just the abuse is ridiculous. Here's another case, and then we'll talk about briefly before the next break about how to support the Wisconsin reform law on the bill that's proposed to reform civil asset forfeiture in Wisconsin. In 2012, the Brown County Drug Task Force arrested a man on drug charges. They told his mother to bring his bail in cash. They told his mother to bring his bail in cash, even though cash is not required for bail. Why would they do that? When the family arrived at the jail, the officers brought out a drug-sniffing dog who alerted on the cash, which had only just been withdrawn from ATMs in the bank. So why would a dog alert on cash that's fresh from an ATM, unless the most recent person that possessed that cash had some weed in their pocket or whatever, coke in their pocket, whatever it might be, or, not to sound overly suspicious, or because they asked the person to bring cash, they've now trained the dogs to smell, fresh money that's out of the ATM. That's entirely possible as well. That might be a little bit of an extreme, conspiracy theory. But just because we don't believe in conspiracy theories doesn't mean they're not necessarily true. Anyway, to finish the story, then, I know you want to talk about theories for a second. The officers seized the $7,500, and only after the family was able to get an attorney did they get their funds back. That is the nature of law enforcement in Wisconsin and why this bill is being proposed. So it's Assembly Bill 537, Senate Bill 521. So if you're in Wisconsin, contact your state legislators, state assembly folks, and state senators, and tell them to please pass this bill. Get it out of committee, get it onto the floor, get it passed, because I'm sure that whatever it does is better than the current situation that we have now, which is the police can just take your stuff, keep it, and spend it on stuff they want to without having to report on it.
I was going to add real quickly, there's also this thing that happens a lot of times when people are bailed out in the state of Wisconsin with a credit card. There's a non-refundable fee, because a lot of times you get charged with something, you have to pay a bail, you get that bail, all of that bail back when you go to court. But what most jails, county jails or city jails, whatever, in the state do is they use this like third-party agency that charges a fee. It might be, I'd say, somewhere between $40 and $50, if I'm not mistaken. But you do not get that money back because it's a non-refundable fee for credit processing. I mean, it's insane. You have your city jail or whatever, and you have the court system right connected with it usually, and for some reason they have to go to a third-party agency for the financial paperwork. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I agree. And it's sick. And it's not only in Wisconsin. It's nationwide. And to get back to our president, Donald J. Trump, has no problem with civil asset forfeiture. As a matter of fact, he was
not my president. Not my president. I'm not responsible for anything he does.
So we need to do something about it to try and make people aware of what's going on. So he was in Texas recently, and before the Texas legislature, there is a bill that would allow law enforcement officials to seize assets from those suspected, not charged or convicted, of involvement in criminal activity. Connie Burton, who is a Republican from Colleyville, Texas, would like to reform civil asset forfeiture in Texas. The sheriffs down there complained about it to President Trump. He's like, oh, can you believe that? Can you believe that? What's her name? And so he wants this person's name, who happens to be a Republican, same party as he is, in order to, what it sounded like, exert some influence, if not ruin this person's career, for daring to do something that would limit the police in Texas's authority to take your stuff if you've only been accused for a crime, maybe not even that, dispose of it as they see fit without any accountability. That's the government we live in, folks. Wisconsin, Texas, United States. Civil asset forfeiture, eminent domain. Again, we're not even talking about taxation. We're talking about ways that the government actually takes your stuff and disposes of it against your will, stuff that you thought you owned. This is the Free People Show on MadisonTalks.com. If you want to join us after the break, 608-210-1667, 608-210-1667. Not a lot of show left, but we are open phone line, so please feel free to join us after the break.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
It is the fire that lights itself.
So we're back to Free People Show, MadisonTalks.com. I'm your host, Phil Anderson, co-host Miles Kristen. And we're just getting used to doing this. So as Miles was squinting and talking about his eyesight, that went out live via Facebook. So everyone knows about your eyeball problems.
I have a fake eye lens. I'm not even making that up. I really have a fake eye lens.
What does that mean?
I have a $20,000 piece of plastic in my right eye. My eye lens replaced when I was in like 19 or so.
So Miles isn't fully human, everyone. He is not fully
partially
human.
Partially cyborg.
Not 100% human. It doesn't help him see any better, but it's still, there's part of him that's fake. Yeah. So anyway, that's not what we're going to talk about in the few minutes we have left. If you want to join us, 608-210-1667. Thanks for those who are watching on Facebook Live and making comments. They're very useful. The board that's in front of us is not something that can be moved. It's Mitch's board for his show, so we're not going to move it. At least maybe next week and in ensuing shows we'll find ways to set the cameras up better rather than try disassemble Mitch's studio. So a lot of things we talk about in this program and a lot of things that libertarians talk about are ways that your government is abusing you and our government is abusing us, and our president intends to use the power of government to abuse us in ways that I don't think people really realize or think of in a certain way. I think there's a sort of cognitive dissonance between what people assume that the United States is about, what it stands for. Politicians of all parties talk about, you know, what does America mean? Some wax more poetic about it, city on a hill, blah, blah, blah. Some are more realistic about it. But this idea that we're a special place relative to the other parts of the world, I think, is constantly being debunked if you just look at what is actually going on. And like the comment from the Russian immigrant involved in the eminent domain case, you know, he's comparing it to things that went on in Russia, which is a sad comment, but I think it's actually true. But there are a lot of other things out there, a lot of other ways that our government is involved in things that are a little more far-fetched, I would say, and are classified as conspiracy theories. Now, a lot of things have come out in the last few years that give more credence to the idea that the government does things and then hides things from us. Not only the assassination of John Kennedy, which has been, you know, had movies made about it, blah, blah, blah.
Robert Kennedy.
But the Robert Kennedy one.
That MLK.
Where the bullets came from various directions, and there's no way that Sirhan could have done it, and they just finally unsealed the LAPD records. We should be suspicious. Now, I'm not saying I believe in conspiracy theories or any particular one, but I think it's wise, and I adopt the policy that I wouldn't put anything past our government.
Yeah.
I mean, it's composed of people. But there are people that work in the government and are elected to office that have the perverse incentive of remaining in power. And as Lord Acton said, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And the more the power the government has, the more we'll have corrupt people involved in government.
Yeah. Well, like last year, the United States government finally released the 26 pages of the 9/11 Commission that detailed how members of Saudi Arabia and the Saudi Arabian government were directly involved in 9/11. And that was, I want to say, held for, what, about the commission ended in, what, 2004, 2005? Mm-hmm. So this paper was, these pages were held, you know, classified for over 11 years.
Just to protect the Saudis.
Yeah, so the United States government actively declassified, the United States government covered up Saudi Arabia's involvement in 9/11 and lied to us all for over a decade. And I'm sure Democrats and Republicans, politicians, they were aware of this. They were able to see, certain members were able to see these documents. But Pokemon Go came out that same week, and Pokemon Go was every news story. And I'm sorry, but Pokemon Go doesn't have as much effect on my life and the life of people in other countries as 9/11 and the war on terror and the wars overseas. But Pokemon Go is the thing that people remember from that week, not the declassification of the 26 pages of the 9/11 Commission.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we look at what the government, what the United States government in particular, and its intelligence, so-called intelligence agencies, we have to look at their record to determine, you know, whether we should believe what they say. And clearly, for a long, long time, you know, if you look at the government as the same as you would look like any business or any institution, if you were to call your cell phone provider and they were constantly lying to you about your bill, or even occasionally lying to you about your bill or about your service or whatever, you would stop trusting what they say. If the grocery store was constantly trying to pawn off half-rotten vegetables as fresh vegetables, or even if it happened occasionally, you would always be suspicious. You would start turning over every head of lettuce, closely examining the bag of onions, all these sorts of things. I think it's only reasonable that based on the fact, just like Miles just pointed out, and other many, many ways that our government has lied to us and hidden things from us that we have a right to know. Not things that are a security risk. Like, for example, exactly the example that you mentioned, what would it have harmed people or the victims of 9/11 or whoever was affected by it to know that the Saudis were involved? That's not something that the only thing that it really jeopardizes is the stream of money and the stream of oil and the stream of weapon sales and the things that are going back and forth between the Saudis and the United States government. That's the only thing that was in jeopardy.
And
the truth was there. We deserve to know the truth. As a matter of fact, we went to war. I mean, that's a whole other thing. We went to war. People died. People were killed and died. People that we know, people from Wisconsin, people from Dane County, died about this lie and concealing this truth. And if the people of America had known that it was the Saudis that were at the root of it, then would we have gone to war with Iraq? Would we have, you know, how would that have all played out? Who would be alive now and who would be dead? Ask yourselves those questions, fellow Americans. Ask yourself, should you ever believe anything the government says? Shouldn't you always question it? Because they will tell you a story.
And now the anti-conspiracy theorists who have denied every conspiracy theory that has facts behind it believes that the Russian government rigged the election with no proof behind that.
Yeah, of course, people choose their theories and choose who to believe based on their political identification, and that's, you know, it's sad. We as libertarians try to look for the truth, ideally, although we have flaws as well. That's what I hope all of you will do when you continue to follow us on the Free People Show. You can find us at madisontalk.com, and we'll be here next week, I expect, and watch us for news and updates. I'm Phil Anderson, your host. Thanks to Miles Kristen for co-hosting. Thanks to Mike B for engineering. Thanks to Mitch for the opportunity, and we will see you next week, if not sooner. Thanks.
Soldiers and Nixons.